Welcome to Ask Gwen, everyone. This morning, as you know, I am querying my book to agents, and that's a longer process than I thought. So send good buds out to my book, and we'll see what happens. Last night, an agent threw me in the trash can after I did my research. It's the journalist in me that does the research, and this agent took a YA, says that they take YA novels, turns out they did not. So it's like, really? Really, you guys, you say you take YA novels, and you do not. So that's that. But I have a very special guest with me, Andrew, and I'm going to interview him, and then he's going to interview me. So I'm super excited to welcome Andrew. And Andrew, please explain to my audience more of what you do. I know what you do, of course, but my audience doesn't know what you do.
Well, thank you, Gwen. Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor and pleasure to be here on your show.
You are so welcome.
I am in my 20th year as a financial advisor. I am part of a family-owned and operated business. So my father started the company back in 1993, and my younger brother here works with me. We help individuals, corporations, nonprofit organizations with financial planning and managing their investments. We also help small business owners to run their 401k or 403b retirement plans. So this is the type of work that we do. We're investment people. We do a lot of research on companies, on the economy, to try to assess where we are in the economic cycle. And by doing that, we are trying to make a determination, where are we? Is there risk in the financial markets? Is the risk high? Is the risk low? And then we want to manage our clients' money accordingly, because we think it's equally as important to protect their hard-earned money as it is to try to plan and grow it for the long term.
Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you guys all know we had an economic downturn in 2008-2009, and I was one of the billions of people that lost their job. I felt the same way you did. I wasn't making a paycheck at the job anyway, and it was time for me to get out of there. So, Andrew, do you think the way the political climate is going right now, and the economic climate is going right now, that we're going to have another downturn?
That's the $64,000 question, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, people have really short memories often. I mean, clearly you remember the challenges and difficulties of 2008 because it impacted you. You lost your job and you were not making a paycheck. But right, that was nearly 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago now. So many people, maybe they didn't lose their job. They only felt the pain in their 401k plan or their investment portfolio. And they've been fortunate that the market has moved up strongly since then. So they're feeling better now. I think it's normal that, you know, the economy should be cyclical. In years past, you would have a bear market once every 3 to 4 years. It's unusual. We were in very unusual times that in the financial crisis and coming out of the financial crisis because of the severity of what had happened with major brokerage firms going bankrupt and the financial system being at risk of not functioning properly, that the Federal Reserve and the world central banks really took extreme measures to stimulate an economic recovery. So we're happy that things are, you know, more or less back on track. But my answer to your question is that it is normal to have cycles. You know, the economy should go through periods of growth and then slow down, and then you have a recession, and then a recovery, and then you're growing again. I think that the economic cycles have been a little bit, I guess they're external forces, in that because things were so severe in 2008 that we saw interest rates lowered to near zero. So you and I were not making money on our savings accounts. And those are the extreme measures I'm talking about that the central banks took, so that they want companies to have cheap money that they can borrow, and hopefully that will go back into the economy and stimulate growth. I think that cycles happen, and that's why we think it's important to really try to do our homework and analyze the data so that we can make that assessment or determination. Are we high risk? Are we low risk? The political climate is also an unusual one, especially with a president who tweets frequently, and some of those tweets really get a rise out of people. So it's difficult to analyze and try to process a lot of that. That's why we try to look at the numbers. I mean, we look at economic data, like how is the U.S. economy doing? How are American corporations doing? Are they making money? And corporate earnings have been very good this year, and they're actually getting a little benefit because of the tax cuts this year, sort of as a one-time benefit. So corporate earnings are strong. The U.S. economy is growing. We don't see the likelihood of a bear market in the very near term here. We feel like things are okay. But there will be a correction. I mean, at some point, it is normal, as I said, to have economic cycles. And, one of the concerns is that because the bull market has gone for so long. I mean, the market bottom was March 9th of 2009. That's a long time. So there is a risk that if you're thinking that there are these external forces that, really trying to get the economy going, get the stock market propped up, when there's a correction, one can argue that, could it be a big one again? It could be. But we just don't see it at this moment as being a high risk.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better, because I was listening to a podcast, a financial podcast, and they said, well, there may be a downturn in 2020. And I'm like, oh, my God, if there's another downturn, we would all run the other direction, because if the downturn happened the way it did in 2008-2009, we would be up the creek without a paddle. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, I hope there's not a downturn. So that's why I kicked off this interview with Bear the Bad News, because I was making sure all these graduates who are now coming out of college in 2018, and I'm coming out of associate degree in 2019, that we can all still find stable jobs. I can't find a stable job in my new degree because of this political climate, FYI, you guys, because someone, and not me, not Andrew, keeps calling every journalist on the planet, take news, and you can probably figure out who that is and how that's impacting me. And it's like, really? So I was just curious from Andrew whether I would be able to go into freelance work without losing my shirt. And I'm pointing to him, yes. And so now Win is a very happy camper. And Andrew, you also have a podcast, don't you?
I do. I'm the host and creator of the Inspired Money podcast, which launched September of last year.
Well, everyone should go listen to the Inspired Money podcast. Everyone, I haven't caught up. That's my project for this weekend, to binge listen to the Inspired Money podcast, because the one episode I did catch was fabulous. So Andrew does a good job on that. Now, my next question is, I've been fortunate enough to be given a trust fund. I was given this trust fund was set up for me way back when, and I didn't know about it until I was 17, but now I am starting to be realistic with it, and I am now starting to understand the trust fund and understand why I'm so blessed with the trust fund. But my question is, I know you have to file a trust fund on the IRS, which is aka taxes, even if it is in a foreign country, which mine is. But my question is, can I still have my paycheck from my day job with my trust fund? Now, my day job is teaching, so that's low income anyway. My trust fund will be higher than my teaching paycheck. But I am making $200 starting this year. Yes, I gave myself a pay raise because I'm like, oh, who gives? And so I gave myself a pay raise, but I'm wondering whether that paycheck would impact my trust fund.
That's an excellent question. I think I need a little bit more information from you, because there are many different kinds of trusts with different purposes. Am I correct to assume that this is a fund that your parents or grandparents set up for you?
My mom's dad set this up. My mm-hmm. mom's dad. He is no longer with us. How he, and I'll tell you this because I mentioned it and I'll come and win. We were one of the original franchisees of Caterpillar tractors in the Bahamas and in Canada. And we did really, really well with that up until 1998, when we sold the electric portion of that company. So yes, this trust fund has been set up by my grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is so very cool. Actually, my father, who I mentioned started our company, he started his career as an analyst covering machinery. So he would visit Caterpillar
God.
Tractor and John
oh my
Deere.
God. How
and
cool is that? How
it's
cool
really
is
cool
that?
Because
and
the
yes,
benefit...
Yes, Caterpillar Tractor still in existence. I see that and it makes me smile every time.
The benefit to me as a child was that my dad would go on a business trip to go visit these companies and come home with a, you know, Caterpillar tractor that they
yeah.
gave away to all
toys.
The people who
toys,
attended.
Basically.
So I got toys. It
yeah.
was great. Yeah.
yeah.
I still
yeah,
have some
you
of
got
those.
Toys. You got toys of Caterpillar tractors. Me, I never got toys of Caterpillar tractors, but I at least now have a trust fund to keep me going off of that.
As the beneficiary, you could buy yourself a Caterpillar tractor toy.
Yes. Yes, I could.
I think yours is better than mine.
Yes, I could. Yes, I could. But my main question, all kidding aside, is will the trust fund impact my day job? Because I could automatically switch over to being a full-time writer. I'm actually quitting my job and doing what I love in the next 3 years. So I'm pushing paycheck out the door because Even though I love my day job, it's the paycheck.
And it sounds like you are looking for something more purposeful and fulfilling.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I think in regard to your question, like I said, there are different types of trusts and they have different purposes. So I think what you need to do is refer to the trust document, because in that, your grandfather would have put down stipulations on, he could have clarified, like, how he wants the money to be used, if there are any restrictions, for example, if you're working or if you're not working. But all of those could be unique to your trust, not just like a general one size fits all. So I think that you need to refer to that trust document and read through it. Most likely, I think that you working would not impact. But like I said, I think it depends on when your grandfather sat down with the lawyer to set up the trust. You know, what was he trying to accomplish? So you need to read that document to figure that out.
I will as soon as I. Right now, we're working on my reasoning test to figure out this trust, whether I can handle having this trust. Don't ask. They want to see mentally whether I can handle having the trust. But as soon as that's over, I will sit down and read the trust documents. I knew you were going to tell me that, Andrew. I knew you were going to give that advice to everyone listening to this podcast who has a trust and who's very lucky to have a trust. Sit down and read the trust documents. Please don't automatically assume, and I will do that the same way that Andrew said, because the trustee who gave it to me might have specifically said, this is how I want the money to be used, and this is what you're supposed to do, and nothing else.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that if you read it and it's not clear or confusing to you, you can always have a lawyer review it, or you can even ask a financial advisor, someone like me, even though I will be perfectly honest and say I am not the trust expert. A lawyer would be far more qualified. But it is something that we do, for clients or prospective clients, just helping to try. Yeah, it's like be a second pair of eyes to review a document. And then what we have at our advantage is that we have trust attorneys that we know that we could say, hey, can you do me a favor and just take a quick glance at this to answer this question. That way they're not charging you an hourly rate.
And I will have two lawyers look at it for me, because I know my trust company, but I don't think they, not to put anything against my trust company, even though this trust is sitting in the foreign country of Bahamas right now, at a trust company, when I said to them, these are the documents I need to fill out on my taxes, they looked at me like I had two heads, because they're a tax haven country to begin with. The Bahamas is a tax haven country to begin with. So I love having the trust, but now I have to read the documents and read the deed and figure this all out.
Right. It requires a little homework on your part. But what I like hearing is that, you hear the term trust fund baby. And usually that sort of has like a negative or derogatory feeling to it. People say, oh, well, that person's a trust fund baby. Yeah. Almost saying like they're lazy. They don't have to work. They're taken care of.
Oh, no.
I love what I'm hearing from you, because you are such an amazing person trying to get things done. You're trying to help people. You're trying to make a positive impact in this world. So, I love your attitude, because it's not a case where you are sitting at home and saying, I have some money, so I don't need to worry about anything. I can just sit here watching TV. But
no way, no how. No way, no how.
But when that does happen, right? Because that's why sometimes you hear of...
That does happen all the time.
You hear of kids who get into trouble, right? They're doing things that are not productive. They're self-destructive. And so good on you for being so amazing and doing all the things that you're doing.
I'm actually trying to help with my trust where I can. I looked it up on the IRS website, even, and you guys can go look these things up. It's pretty simple. All you have to do is type in trust fund. Do you have to file a Schedule K? Which, yes, most of us with trust funds do have to file a Schedule K, which I'm already getting savings accounts, investments from my banks, and because I have 2 certificates of deposit steadily growing, I think gaining $1 in interest or something ridiculous like that. So me filing a Schedule K would just be the easy end of it, because it's I already filed a document from my bank, plus my W-2, so it's like easy now, because you just have to file the appropriate documents so you don't get in trouble. And even though my trust is sitting in a tax haven country, I still have to file it, because that's what the IRS requires. So you guys can, and this is public knowledge, I mean, I'm just not telling you this because I know it, this is what the IRS is, and the IRS, you can go to their website and any single time, not tax season, but just in June, just in general, to say I stumbled across money on jelly glass, now what? So, and they'll be able to help you. All people like Andrew will be able to help you. Now, we're going to flip it and have Andrew ask me a couple questions.
I would love to. Well, let's open with this, Wynn. What is your earliest childhood memory of money?
My earliest childhood memory of money is opening up a bank account, which I'm embarrassed to say I still have, thank you very much. It has a lot more money in it than it did originally, but my dad was, he's the type of parent that he'll give me, we talk about finances in this house all the time. So we have open-ended conversations about finances, and he's the type of parent that will occasionally stick $10 in my checking account without even asking me, even email me about it. So that being said, I've had a bank account, a working bank account, since I've been about 10, I think.
Nice. From an early age, money has been a part of your life. And have you made any mistakes along the way in your learning process about money?
A little, but I've, and I'll tell that story later, you guys, after I did all this trust fund organized, but I have made some mistakes with money, but you'd be very proud of me. I have 1 student loan paid off already, and I'm still in my program, and I'm working on paying the other one off early, thank you very much, so that I don't have to worry about it, and it won't be the death of me when this trust fund comes in.
Good for you. Yeah, there's a lot of value to taking care of it.
Because student loans are the death of everyone.
Yeah, sleeping well at night is invaluable, right? Not having to worry about the loan.
Yeah. Not having to worry about it. No, I promised myself I said, if I was very lucky the first time with my education degree, my dad and mom actually paid for it, and they let me come out of school with no student debt whatsoever. And then because of that, I promised myself if I sent myself back to school to get a total different degree, I would definitely not come out of school with student loan debt. I promised myself day one when I got the acceptance letter.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you for answering so frankly about your money experiences. You know, that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with the Inspired Money podcast. It's having some money talk, but a lot of people shy away from the idea of talking about money. It can be uncomfortable. It doesn't make for a fun podcast, or at least it doesn't sound that inviting. But I think that's why adding the inspired part to Inspired Money, that's what makes it fun, because I get to talk to all kinds of different people and hear about what's motivating them to build a business, or what's motivating them to be charitable and give money away and trying to make an impact in this world. And part of that for me is that I love the idea of doing things that scare you, to force yourself outside of your comfort zone. I think that we all need to be always pushing ourselves to be better. And by doing that, it's like you're trying new things. When I look at you, Wynn, that's something that you do, because you've been a triathlete, you're a podcast host, you're currently trying to market your book to publishers. So my question for you is, what's your motivation to make these things happen? And how do you put your ideas into action?
My motivation, and this will be the last question, and then a high note, as we started off on a bad note, my motivation to do all this is just to keep people motivated and keep people from not believing in their dreams. I mean, as we said earlier with the trust fund, when you get a trust fund, you can either use it wisely, which I'm doing, or use it against you, which I'm not doing. And so I just want people to be inspired by my story and people to talk about money in a way that's not taboo.
That is great. Do we have time for one follow-up question for you?
Yeah, we do, actually.
Oh, fantastic. It's amazing what you're doing, and I love that you're trying to motivate people. In your case, if you add a disability, I think it adds like another layer of complexity, because not only do you have to counter your own self-talk sometimes that holds you back, right? We all have that. But when you have a disability, sometimes the people around you also have expectations of what you can or what you cannot do. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I try to not necessarily. I try to do it nicely and not shove my book in their face, even though I feel like it. And I try and not get on the disability train, so to speak. When people are having a bad day and they want to bring me into it, I'm like, no, I have enough problems in my own life to be tackling. I don't need to tackle yours as well. So I try just to give people inspiration and deal with CT gracefully, even though CT seems to get in the way, and maybe having a good example as a trust fund baby will be a good example to people. Maybe, I don't know. But I try just to inspire people every single day.
Well, well done. And I say keep going. I mean, how important do you think it is to surround yourself with the right people who share the same similar motivation ideas as you? And how important is it when you're not surrounded by those people, just to not listen to them, right? Because you have to stay on your mission.
It's always super important to surround yourself with the people that will take you higher. And use the University of Google. If you don't know how to get a book agent like I am, use the University of Google. Google and book agents' wishes, and they will pop up, because book agents are very particular on what they want and whether they accept you or reject you. But just surround yourself with the people that will educate you and will take you higher.
I love that. I love that. You are so tireless and positive, and I love those ideas about self-development, because we can all improve ourselves. And as you said, the University of Google doesn't cost anything. You can do your research.
No, and actually, as I'm getting my fashion journalism degree, my teachers make me use the University of Google.
Yeah, and to your credit, I mean, I laugh because you wanted to interview me about trust accounts, but after hearing you speak, I think that you've done your research. You know more than I do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I appreciate the time, Andrew, and I hope you guys enjoyed another fabulous episode with Andrew and myself of Ask Gwen, and I'll keep you guys updated on my trust, and I'll keep you guys updated on everything else that's going on in my life. The trust, as soon as I get the trust out of my life, it will be a lot easier, and as soon as I kind of aid, that will be a lot easier on me. Right now I'm on a hunt for aid, but that's another long story in itself. So I appreciate you guys listening, and I hope you guys enjoyed another fabulous episode. Thanks, you guys.